We talk with our clients about when you have your convictions and you know what is true for you, and that can be what I'm good at, like what I enjoy doing from work, what I also am interested in, what I care about. And the intersection of those is starting to get you very close to what you might be really, really thriving in doing. When you know what's true for you and you've got that clarity, clarity brings confidence because now you're not pretending. I'm not trying to guess with the interviewer. What does she think the right answer is? What am I supposed to say? And when you've got that, you kind of and you show a little bit of that either fear, lack of confidence, whatever it is, people pick up on it. But when we are confident and not arrogant, not bragging, but just appropriately confident because we believe this is true about us, confidence is contagious. People sit like, she's really excited about this. She really cares about this. She's good at doing this kind of work. That's the sort of person we want on our team, even if they come from a non-traditional background. She's making me believe she can do this.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm glad that you're mentioning that because when you don't know what you want, then you naturally have that feeling, I'm not good at anything. And so it's right. Just what you said, that actually it's, you know, clarity is actually what leads to confidence.
So can you help us think about frameworks, thought processes, exercises that people can do to really start to home in on what they're genuinely excited about? I usually stop a little bit short of passionate because I think that word gets overused some, but have a true curiosity about and an interest to continue to learn more. Are there exercises or tools that you can recommend to people that will help them gain some of that clarity?
Yeah, well, there are plenty of exercises and it really depends on, you know, what will help you interrupt your pattern of thought. So this is always, so if it's too easy, so you may want to do something else. But usually when I work with my coaching clients, so the first thing that we start doing is actually getting clear on their ideal life, not getting clear on their ideal career, because, you know, you want your career to be part of your life and not to create a career. And then all of a sudden your whole life needs to fit into that. And by doing this exercise, you actually ask yourself, so, you know, so what are the different life areas that are important to you? Like, for example, it may be career, but it also may be, you know, relationships with other people. It may be spirituality. It may be material possessions. It may be whatever is important to you. Mm-hmm. And so you ask yourself, so when my life is ideal, you know, how does my life look like when everything's ideal? And so this is something that I have learned from my mentor, Janet Atwood. And so by asking yourself this question and then going a step further and reassessing your current life against that ideal life, it kind of gives you a happiness score because now you know, am I living this, you know, at a 10 or at a zero? And so, and what is really powerful about this exercise, and so, and this is what Janet came up with, is to really think about a marker that will show you that you are on the right track. And so a marker is a bit different than a goal, because for example, if you say, when I am, you know, when my life is ideal, I am healthy and fit. So let's really, you know, keep it simple. And so a goal may be I am going to exercise 1 hour a day to be healthy and fit. Mm-hmm. But what is a marker? So what will happen in your life so that you can say, oh my God, you know, this is really happening. And so my life is ideal right now. And it can be something like your wife tells you, oh, like you look so good today. You know, it could be like I am sitting in a restaurant and I actually crave healthy food. So it's not a sacrifice that I need to make. Right. It is about, you know, like I jump out of bed and I actually love going for a run. So it could be anything that really becomes true in your life. And then when that one thing happens, you know, oh, wow. So it really is happening. And when you get yourself to that place of really visualizing what would be happening and how would other people experience you if you were living your ideal life. Mm-hmm. Most people, when they go through this exercise, they also get in touch with what kind of impact do I really want to make? And so it's less about the career, what do I want? It's actually more about what do I want to do for other people? It's really funny how it works, but when you really get in touch with that ideal life that you want to live, then it actually pushes you to thinking about, you know, when I'm living that life, then all of a sudden I have so much energy to do something else for other people. And that is where you actually then get in touch with your purpose, because your purpose is not so much about you as it is about contributing and creating something new for others.
Wow, that is a brilliant insight. And again, if I could just underscore that from personal experience, this is probably 3 or 4 years ago now. And I had written LinkedIn posts and put together some job search, you know, presentations before, but I wanted to do a masterclass and just really kind of have it all laid out for someone. And the way I described it was like I had put the pieces of a jigsaw puzzle out on the table, but I never painted the whole box of what this thing was supposed to look like when you were done. And so what I found was dabbling and trying to, you know, a little bit on Saturday and a little bit at night wasn't working. And I was just going to take a week off, just take a week of vacation and just finish this project. And so I did. And that Monday morning, the alarm goes off, and I'm embarrassed to say this, but the alarm goes off. And the first thing I think is, oh, crap, I've got to write this term paper. I've got this big project I have to do. And almost immediately, my mind shifted to, no, you get to go hopefully help a bunch of people, many of whom you may never meet, but who will benefit from the content that you're going to go create this week. And that little bit of change was all the difference in the world, that it wasn't about me and it wasn't about the work. It was about the result and the benefit of the work. And to your point, how it would help somebody else, not help me. And like I said, like the thing wrote itself, it became much, much easier to do and much more fulfilling and hopefully a better work product.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. And let me build on that. So what scientists actually have discovered is that this is also a great way to become good at what you want to do in the future. And you probably have read a lot of books and articles about visualization and how important that is to imagine yourself in your dream job. And then if you think long enough about it and frequently enough, then eventually you're going to find yourself in that dream job. And what research actually has found that that's not quite true. So what is way more effective is actually, you know, visualizing the enjoying the process of getting there. So for example, if you want to have, let's say, a successful business, so it's not about imagining how everything is great, but really imagining, you know, enjoying talking to your clients, imagine doing something that feels difficult. And so it even applies to, you know, whatever you want to achieve, but really mentally rehearsing and enjoying the process of getting there is way more effective than actually visualizing only the final outcome. Because when we just are focused on that final outcome, our brain kind of gets that feeling, oh, this was easy. So it's not motivated enough to do everything it takes to get there. But if you really can get yourself to that place where you say, you know, I'm jumping out of bed and I'm actually happy about doing what it takes, then you can be almost certain then that you are going to arrive there.
Well, I think too, just for kind of more persistent joy, if I can express it quite that way, you know, when we live in a mindset of I'll be happy when, you're probably not going to be happy ever. But if you can be happy now, and to your point, because you're embracing the process and what it's bringing out and developing in you, then every day has a purpose. And it's not something to be endured, but it's something to be embraced. And that is a massive mind shift change of what am I learning today about me, the business, other people, whatever it is, so that I can continue to grow as a person And then I think to your really well-made point, not stopping with how am I growing as a person, but then ultimately how am I impacting other people positively. One thing, this is going to be maybe the less sexy part of this, because I really enjoy the parts about purpose and fulfillment and work-life integration. And I think all those are really, really important topics. From the practical side of it, one place where we see clients struggling is that on the one hand, employers will say that we really value agile learners. The world's changing very quickly, and we need people that can keep up with the pace of technology, business models, whatever. At the same time, in the real, real world, what we see is, hey, we want somebody for this role who's done this exact role in this exact industry, and they actually want to take no risk with a candidate. And somebody who is making a career change can feel extremely risky to an employer. And I'm wondering how you might help people think about how to reconcile basically not feeling so risky to the employer and helping connect those dots in the interviewer's mind that you're not so far away from this role as it might seem.
Yeah. And so that is a great question. And it is actually an obstacle that almost all career changers face, because typically how job descriptions are written nowadays is you need X of years of experience in a certain field. And so if you don't have that, then you are thinking, you know, oh my God, so should I apply? And I always ask people, can you do the job? Because if you can't, then your resume cannot do the work for you. So you need to be able to do the job. But if you can do the job, then it is your job to connect the dots for the hiring manager. Right. Because what I hear from a lot of people is, oh, Anna, you know I can do it, but if they just could see it. And so you have to understand it doesn't work that way, because it's not their job to see it. It's your job to show it. And so unfortunately, how hiring works is that people really look at that experience to assess if you can perform in the role or not, which is actually not the right way of hiring, because we have, you know, a review of 81 studies that says that previous experience has nothing to do with one's success in a new role. So that review of 81 studies was published in the Harvard Business Review. And what they say is what actually predicts performance is your past performance. So it's not so much about what you did in the past, but how you performed in the past. And since for employers, it's a lot more difficult to assess how you did something as opposed to what you did. So this is why we actually still, you know, it's the lazy approach to hiring, because it is much easier for someone just to write, you know, a certain number of years of experience, and then you are the perfect candidate or not. And so you have to know that still, even though the times are changing, because also this year's Gartner Work Trend Report says that more and more companies are really willing to hire people who don't have the perfect experience. And so it still means that it is your job to really convince those people that, you know, that you can do the job, and basically to connect the dots. So this is what I've done, and this is how it relates to the role that you now have open. So no one will do this job for you. So it is really your job to sit and to think about each bullet in the job description, you know, so start backwards. So don't think about, here's what I've done, take it or leave it, but really think about, okay, here's what you need. Okay, so this is what you need, and this is what I can offer. And so basically you never start, because, and I mean, this is really, I see that with a lot of people, we are emotionally attached to the experiences where we have put a lot of effort into. And so what you naturally do is you go into a job interview, or even when you're writing your resume, and then you keep emphasizing that one thing because you know that you spent 14 hours a day doing that. But is that the most relevant thing to that role? If it's not, then unfortunately, people won't care that much. So the only one who cares is you. And so what they care about is, what have you done that shows us that you can do this job. And so it is really about taking that backwards approach and thinking, you know, putting yourselves in the shoes of the hiring manager. So how can they easily understand that you have what it takes to perform in that role?
Yeah. So it's really interesting. We this might have been within the first five podcasts that we ever did. And this guy had a, you know, worked like in manufacturing and kind of a funky role, but he wanted to get into enterprise SaaS software sales. That's where he really wanted to go. It was more interesting to him. He thought he could make more money doing it and would just be a better fit for him. And he goes to this company and they're like, why are we even talking to you? Like he got a referral in. So kind of as a courtesy, the chief revenue officer took the meeting. And he's looking at his resume. He's like, why am I even talking to you? We want people that have got, you know, X years of quota attainment, selling to this kind of executive enterprise software. And what I thought my friend did just like an amazing job of was, tell me why that's important. You know, what are the underlying things that that would indicate to you? And he just kept breaking it down. And he was able to relate his experience. Well, I have done that. You don't call it that, but here's exactly what I've done that relates very closely to what the underlying behaviors are that you're looking for. And the guy's like, okay, fine. And he ended up going through the process and they had kind of a hire by committee in terms of where people vote. He was the only person that ever got all the votes. But he did that I thought was just a masterful job was he broke down what are the underlying things that you're really looking for. And then to your point, connected the dots for them because they were so far apart in that CRO's mind that he wasn't going to see it. So my friend really doubled down on the research, the prep, asking great questions, and ultimately landed the job that he was quite successful at. He wasn't setting himself up for failure. He set himself up to be on the path that he wanted to be, was there for 3 years, and got recruited away to go lead North America sales for somebody in SaaS software. So the point that I think that you're making so well is it's incumbent upon the candidate, not the interviewer, to see the path and to be able to, you know, articulate that path of why I am a good fit for this role instead of hoping that the interviewer figures it out on her own.
Yeah, and I'll give you an example. So for example, me, you know, leading D&I projects. So if I was applying for a D&I role, then I would basically list everything that I am doing in this role that is also listed in the job description, because I know this is what people hear about. And so I would say, you know, coordinate internal employee resource groups, and, you know, I coordinate 900 people within four networks, whatever it is. And so then I would list achievements, you know, about me designing and rolling out trainings on unconscious bias. And then I would speak about, you know, the recruiting events that I do and so forth. But then if I was applying for an employer branding role, I wouldn't make the case about me coordinating different employee resource groups. Yeah. I would make the case about, so what is it? Okay, oh, I have designed that event, you know, for underrepresented groups. So probably that would be the first bullet. And then what else do they need? Oh, they need you to be able to engage, you know, the company's audience on social media. Oh, okay, I had the role model campaign and that's what I did that time. So let me put that onto my resume. And so basically you are going to dig deep into your stories, and it's really crazy like how many stories people can find if they just dedicate the time to think about it from a different perspective. And usually you need someone to pull that out of you. So it's also good to talk just to a good friend or a coworker. It doesn't have to be a career coach, but someone who is going to challenge you and who is going to say, okay, whatever you said right now, how is it relevant to the job description? And if it's not, then probably you've got some work to do.
Yeah, I really appreciate what you said about, you know, stories. The way that I say is the resume might get you the interview. The stories you tell will get you the job because you need to make me believe. And sometimes, though, people don't know their own stories as well as they could or should. And one of the things that you just said that I think is very helpful is going back to colleagues, and this may be two or three jobs ago, but going back to colleagues that worked on a project with you and asking them how they remember your contribution and what was the impact of that project. Because again, end of one, my memory's terrible. I don't remember. I've just moved on to the next thing in my life. And you go back and talk with a teammate and she might say, oh, don't you remember? You know, we did this, that, and the other thing, and the way that played out in the business, and we ended up growing sales or cutting costs or mitigating risk. And other people can provide you with some facts, some perspective on your contribution, what qualities you brought forward in that role, in that project, that oftentimes we're not self-aware of. And even to the extent that we are, we lack the vocabulary or the ability to articulate it in a compelling way. And so we're kind of getting back to a theme of other people can help bring out of you what is there. You just may not see it or be able to know how to talk about it.
Yeah. And I'd like to add one thing if I can. Please. Because I see that a lot. So a lot of people who are in roles that are not measured by KPIs, you know, they usually struggle to really identify what is the impact of my role. So I worked with a data analyst and she had prepared presentations for the sales team. And then I asked her, okay, and so how did that presentation help the sales team win new clients? And how many new clients did they win? And she didn't know. And so this is something that you are going to need in your job search, but not only because of your job search, you're actually going to be more successful and more fulfilled in your role if you really go the extra mile and you follow up with the stakeholders that you work with. And then you ask them, hey, you know that, Bob, that sales presentation that I prepared? So how did the meeting with the clients go? And did someone sign up? And how much money did we make? Because then you are going to feel more confident about your job, because it's not going to be, oh, I'm just doing sales presentation. It's going to be, I'm helping this company win new clients. Right. So this is going to be, you know, a great case for your promotion. But also when you start looking for a new role, you are actually going to have a tangible impact to put on your resume. And so I really would like to encourage everyone to start doing that. Always follow up. So if the company invited you to represent your business division at a recruiting event, follow up and say, how many people did join, you know, and how many people did we hire? So I did the presentation and then three people joined the company. Great. So this is a tangible accomplishment that you are going to use in your promotion case, in your new interview case, whatever it may be.
Well, so you bring up a really good point. One is this is helpful. Say that you're not leaving your company. You don't want to leave your company. Sure will help when it's review time and you're asking for a raise. And you can say, hey, here's how I've contributed in the last year. But the other point that maybe we've skipped by, my fault, on this is we don't always have to leave our company to have a career change. We could actually change within departments at the company. And you know, so there's some equity that we can draw on. We already know the company, how it operates, its lingo, the industry, but I want to go from finance to HR, like somebody I know did. And you don't have to completely change everything, but you can start to make a significant change. So I think that, again, for maybe our less risk tolerant people, like you don't have to completely go, you know, from all the way west to all the way east. You can kind of go north within your own company and start to make those pivots. Do you see that as a viable path for your clients of not having to leave the company, but just change departments, divisions, functions?
Well, that is actually the fastest way of later landing a job in a new field at a different company, because you have proof that you were able to pull it off at your own company. So if you can do that, I always recommend to do it, because it really is a shortcut, since you don't need to convince someone else that now you can do finance or HR or whatever it is.
Right.
And within your company, it is easier because you can start working on a project. So you can, you know, become part of a project that focuses on that. And so you're still in your job. And then again, that is, you know, taking the risk out of the risk taking. So you can be part of that project that deals with a new topic. And then you can test if you really like the topic or not. So is it really what it seems to be? And are the people, you know, what are the people in this role really doing? And that, you know, that can help you really understand what the role is about, and then also pick up the language that you need to interview for a future role. Maybe you don't even want to change companies, because you don't always need to change companies. So people change companies for a lot of reasons. But sometimes, like you say, you know, staying there and doing something else may be the solution that is right for you.
I want to just zoom out. Maybe we can kind of start to land the plane here. But you know, I can, you know, imagine that some people might be thinking about, like, I'm not thinking about career change. I don't think that I'm going to have to change my career. And the demographic trend is we're living longer. People are living longer. And, you know, working 40 years and retiring at age 65, you know, there, it's conceivable that you're going to live 20 or 30 years longer. Are you really banking enough money to be able to retire for that long, living whatever kind of lifestyle it is that you think that you want to live? That's kind of the financial aspect of it. But then there's I'm still interested. Like, I don't want to just, you know, go sit in a chair and knit for the rest of my life or do crossword puzzles for the rest of my life. I want to, like, continue to contribute just in a different way. And I'm curious how you think about either demographic trends, future of work trends, and that the likelihood of people wanting or needing to have a career pivot?
Well, the likelihood, I mean, what the data say is, and this was published in the Gartner report for this year, is that 56% of job seekers are looking for a job in a new field of expertise. So it means that there are a lot of people. And then if you couple that with the trends that are emerging, so for example, just the field of AI, you know, now with ChatGPT. Yeah. So I've just read somewhere that the people who come up with the right prompts, so that is now
prompt engineering.
Really is that is booming. So sometimes you can't even predict the jobs that are going to emerge with the rise of technology. And so, you know, so it is about your passion, but it is also about what does the world need and how can we find a sweet spot between what I like and how I can contribute. And I believe so it is there. And then it has really less to do with your age. And sometimes people who have done a lot of things, they just find a lot of joy in passing that knowledge on to others. So they are going to be mentors, they are going to coach others, or they are going to bring in their expertise into something new to help the world come up with new technologies or with new solutions or whatever it may be. And I believe that in today's world, so what you are doing today, probably you won't be doing it in 5 or 10 years from now, just because the world is moving that fast. And then you are evolving as a person, and what you like today, it doesn't mean that you have to love that in 5 or 10 years from now.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, what I've enjoyed about this conversation, Anne, is that I find it very hopeful on one hand, but also giving people, knowing that there's a path, there are resources that can allow people, and I like how you just said that, to allow them to continue to grow, evolve, you know, whether, you know, it's externals that are driving change or it's internally that I'm just becoming a new person over time, that we can continue to find fulfillment in our work, fulfillment, how we contribute to society, right? And be part of things that are important to us. If people want to learn more about you and WorkMazing, what's the best way to do that?
So my website is workmazing.com, or you can connect on LinkedIn. So you see my name right here, and happy to get in touch.
Awesome. Well, like I said, I have really, really enjoyed this. As we kind of wind this down, is there any parting thought or bit of wisdom you'd like to leave the audience with?
Yeah. So let's end with, you know, with our starting point. And this is especially true for career changers, because career changers think they have to learn so much and to improve so much in the new field. And I always say, you know, it's self-improvement is great, but always start with self-acceptance. So accept that the way you are and what you have done so far is okay. And it's really, it's the best that you could come up with, the best that you can do. And it is also enough to bring you where you want to go. So always aim for self-improvement, but realize, you know, we are all okay as we are just today.
That is very helpful. And again, knowing so many of our members as I do, that is spot on advice. So thank you for that. And just thank you for your time. This has been great.
Thanks.
Again, for folks who are watching this on YouTube, please like, comment, subscribe. And Anna, thank you so much. I really appreciate you sharing your knowledge and your expertise with us today.
Thanks to you.
Thank you. I know.